All right, welcome into the Salt City Hoops show. My name is Andy Larson. I'm the managing editor of Salt City Hoops. We're here only, 3 days away from Media Day, is that?
Like, yeah.
That's really, really exciting to me.
League-wide, they've started. Places in the league, they've started. Everybody on my Twitter is all excited.
Yeah, so if you have if teams that have an international game today, it's my understanding, Media Day today, and then the ones that don't like the Jazz go on Monday. But so with me today is Ben Dowsett, as always, and then my special guest, Nicole Hernandez, from 1600 AM on the Spanish broadcast. Your official title is sideline reporter, right? But I know that you do, like, you're on the air for, I feel like, the entire game sometimes.
Yeah, so I'm officially the sideline reporter for them, but it's a three-man team,
okay,
or two-man and one-woman team. I do color commentary as well.
So Nicole was there at the media training camp, which is going to be the focus of much of this podcast, just because it was such a cool event that I just want to basically sit around and tell stories about it. And I hope that that'll be entertaining enough to justify a show. But Ben, as someone who wasn't there, is that the case? I hope.
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
I've watched like 4 videos from different sites on it.
So you're watching me with my ridiculous jump shot.
I saw that one, and I saw Jody sink the step in from just inside the three. I saw that one. That was nice
because, first of all, he had the pull up the pump fake, and then went around the defender,
exactly,
and then actually shot and made a shot, which I think was the first shot I saw Jody make all.
I'm just gonna say
I'm not sure that might have been the only one.
Is it the only?
I was a red teammate. I think that was the only one.
Oh wow. Okay. Well, I'm gonna say from a scouting standpoint, Jody, your shot is not broken. It just there's no consistency, man. The stroke is good. Like, there's nothing wrong there. There's no hitch in the motion. Just keep on practicing, buddy. You got it.
On the other hand, my shooting style is very Jamal Tinsley, throw it at the basket esque.
If it works, it works, right?
It did not work. So.
Yeah.
So I want to get into these sort of stories. And you know, there is, unfortunately, video evidence of what happened. But
tell the folks at home real quick what the event was, just for anyone who didn't see it.
So basically, the Jazz did this thing, and I think a lot of it's just because Quinn Snyder's a new coach and kind of wanting to show off what him and his team have been working on in terms of X's and O's. They did this media, quote-unquote, training camp. So they got, I think it was ended up being like 40 members of the media together, from TV, from internet, from radio, from newspapers, and basically got us all together. And for this training camp, they gave us a training camp jersey, they gave us shorts, they gave us socks even, they gave us this bag and stuff.
I thought it was just the jersey. I didn't know they supplied all that stuff.
They went all out. They gave us a little name tag. That was cool.
It's already in my room. It's on my wall.
Nice.
Wait, your jerseys didn't have your individual names on it? Now I'm disappointed.
No, but they did have our numbers.
Okay.
So we selected from a group of numbers. I chose 23 in order to take revenge on Michael Jordan, because I hoped that like my play out there would somehow ruin the reputation of that number. And so basically they threw this practice for us so we could kind of learn the offense, get to know Quinn Snyder and the rest of the Jazz assistant coaches a little bit, and have some fun. I think a lot of it was this group building exercise almost. But so I guess I'll start with kind of explaining how what actually happened, what they put us through, and then we can kind of talk about each part of it. So they started us out with these super embarrassing stretches that like nobody was good at. You may have seen the video of David James falling down as he was backpedaling.
I think I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, like that. So that happened. Luckily, I stayed up. But you know, I don't think most of us writer types were equipped to bending over as much as that. And then he took us through the flow offense, which is, you know, if the Jazz aren't going to be running a set play, how they're going to be running down the floor. So, this is in like transition or semi-transition, basically how the Jazz want to space their offense, and then some just basic actions that come from that.
Okay.
And Quinn talked about how he wants to do that sort of flow offense without a play more often than I think the Jazz are used to with a lot of set plays and, Coach Ty Corbin / Jerry Sloan holding up fingers and calling plays, et cetera, et cetera. Quinn talked about he likes the randomness of that kind of flow motion offense.
I think you're going to see a lot of that sort of thing, especially sort of as you mentioned in the pseudo transition. That's an area that we're not going to get too technical here. This isn't a technical podcast. This is a fun podcast. But I think that's one of the directions and you've seen some pieces recently on it. If you read, for those that are in the blogosphere or whatever, there have been some pieces about, and it's obvious. Transition is a really interesting section of the game, essentially, where you can sort of take advantage of certain elements of defenses not being set and things like that, that I think Quinn's going to want to really capitalize on. It can be a way for, especially for these younger teams and teams that are still developing their talent, to sometimes even out the talent gap by you speed up the pace and things like that.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, and I think it's something that I think the league is going towards overall, and mm-hmm. I think this is a big step for the Jazz and kind of going from this thing they've been doing for 35 years, quote unquote, Jazz basketball. And there have been significant changes, don't get me wrong, but to this sort of more random free-flowing offense, it's going to be interesting to see how it works. Anyway, so then we did some quote-unquote bulk shooting, which we did this game where, you know, the first team to make 10 shots from a given area of the court won. Did your team ever win, Nicole?
We were actually the first team to win the first two times, and then Thurl walked off, and
that's what I was going to ask. Win again.
So you had Thurl on your team?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
That was unfair. In my mind, you guys won all of the games just because Thurl was... I mean, I was watching him during warm-ups, and, you know, we're, like, dribbling around trying not to reveal how bad we are at basketball, and Thurl's just, like, making every shot, right?
Yeah, and I decided to stand by him the whole time, which didn't help my game, like, at all, nor during the stretches. I looked horrible every single second. But, no, you know who actually had a really good shot was Tony.
Yeah? Tony mm-hmm. Parks or Tony,
yeah, Tony
Jones?
Parks. Sorry, okay. Yeah.
I believe that, and he made his free throw, too.
He made his free throw. We didn't have to run. We were okay. The only ones who didn't have to run.
Nobody else made their free throw? Oh, come on, bloggers. I can shoot like 75%.
I was the only blogger there. Bloggers have nothing to do with it.
Sorry, media members. Excuse me. Sorry, media members. Like, what's going on, guys? We got it. Free throws are not that tough. Come on.
Okay, so at one moment, and this is skipping to the end, because we've been going chronologically this far, but then at the end, there's these quote-unquote competitive free throws, and if you make it, your team doesn't have to run, and if you miss it, they do have to run.
Just ladders?
Yeah. Just back and forth. Okay. I mean, yeah. They started by running us ladders, and then they were like, actually, you guys are pretty bad at this. Just the running is too much.
Just one time back and forth. That's it.
So on my team was Rod Zundel from KSL, and so and Tim Montemayor from 1320. So Tim missed his first shot, and then Quinn bet us double or nothing, and Rod
double
Zundel
running. Okay. Oh,
double running, yeah, or nothing, and then so Rod Zundel stepped up to try to shoot the second free throw, and basically said, "You've got a choice, team White. You can either choose to, if you think Rod will make it, go with your team, and you'll have to run two. Or if you don't think Rod will make it, or, you know, double
just
or nothing,
run one
then
now.
Run one now." And I was the only one that was, like, pretty confident Rod Zundel's not a 50% free throw shooter. So I was the one that was like, I don't know if I bet on you. And then everyone was like, no, Andy, it's a team thing. It's not always analytics all the time. I was like, okay.
Did you abandon the team, or did you stay with
them?
No,
then I stayed with the team and ran double. And yeah, Rod missed it.
I wonder what Quinn would have done had you not.
Right? Like, I'm sure
three times
I would
around the entire court.
Had special, like, teammate practice, like how to be a good person.
You guys can all go, Andy, you stay.
They wouldn't have passed you in the scrimmage, that's for sure.
Well, the scrimmage happened before this, so this was the very end. Okay. But I don't think I would have any friends in the media this year either.
True.
So anyway, moving. So we do this bulk shooting exercise. Thurl Bailey wins every game. It seemed like, I don't know. I think Britton Johnson's team also won one.
I was really feeling like a winner with Thurl. I can just say that.
So we had Ron Boone, and I feel like Ron was going like 20% speed through everything. So, I mean, first of all, he's like 60 years old, so it's unfair to ask too much of him anyway. But then I still feel like he had more to give. I was disappointed in what Ron Boone did for our team.
I can honestly say I didn't even remember. I mean, I remember seeing him and was excited for it. And then when it was over, I was like, oh, I forgot to, you know, I wanted to take a picture. You know, I took a picture with Thurl with Big Buddha. And then I was like, oh, I forgot Ron Boone was here.
Yeah. So, yeah, he didn't make his presence known like the other guys did.
How old is Thurl now? He's still pretty young, right? Like, got some spryness in those legs?
He does at least have spryness in that jump shot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It seemed, he came to play. I was pleasantly surprised with Thurl. And then I think the best player there was Britton Johnson. Like, he had that alley-oop in the scrimmage none of us would ever
show us all up.
Yeah.
I loved when he questioned when they would say, we need our bigs. And he'd be like, oh, me? I'm the big? Like, yes, who else is going to be the big down here with all of us? We're like 5'5", 5'7".
Yeah, so the next thing we did were these, like, four-minute stations teaching us little individual aspects of the Jazz offense, which was really cool. So, just to list off the things they taught us, one station was just working on basic pick-and-roll offense. Second one was this play called Channel 2, which is the semi-transition play that has the big set of screen up on the elbow for a wing coming up top and then doing a little pick and roll off of it. And
I love that. I love that play, by the way. I think we're going to see a lot of it this year. It's a fun play.
Do you know that play?
I mean, I didn't know, necessarily know that they called it that, but you see a lot of that play in okay. the kind of the, like we were talking about in the little pseudo transition. The Spurs do it all the time, which is mm-hmm. yeah,
cool. Okay, so yeah, and then the third one is something called Gaggle, where they had this like little double screen in this kind of triangle setup and had us do kind of a dribble handoff off of that we can do some actions off of, and then splits, which truthfully I remember nothing about.
Nicole.
I just remember the Gaggle because that one I was good at. All you had to do was go up and screen.
Yeah.
You couldn't really mess up on that one, Splits.
That because was it's a fun name. One. Splits, I think, is kind of a horn set.
Okay.
And then there were various actions off of it. I think we messed up, or at least my team messed up those actions enough that they just had us go straight to the back door option every time. They're like, oh, if the back door's there, you guys have it. And then that's all we did.
Possible, and then just shoot from wherever you had to shoot it.
Yeah, so it was interesting. So I wanted to say they, you know, had us be quote-unquote guards and bigs, and all of us are, I mean, how tall are you, Nicole?
I'm 5'7".
So, and I'm 6 feet, which, again, these are not NBA big sizes, so yeah. Everyone wanted to be a guard, I feel like, other than maybe Thurl Bailey.
I would have volunteered everyone. To be a big. Would I have been a big there at 6'1", or would they have made me a guard?
I think you may have been a big, yes.
Okay, good, because I don't want to handle the ball. It's bad.
I mean, again, this shouldn't be surprising by now, because everyone says it, but TV personalities in real life are shorter than you would expect.
Usually, yeah. Especially compared with NBA basketball players.
So. Right. Yeah. So that was interesting. Having, you know, some 6 feet and below, sometimes even 5'7", Nicole, playing the big positions was fun.
How tall is Britton?
I don't know.
He's tall.
Tall.
Really tall.
6'9",
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, so. That's what I would guess, too.
And Thurl's around the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Man, those are tall people.
Well, like, so, and this is non sequitur, but I feel like you and I, Nicole, get used to how tall they are just because we're in the locker room and kind of interviewing the players and at the media, at the podium and whatever else.
Yeah, no, at this point, like, you have to be ridiculously, like, Guinness World Record kind of tall for me, but like, you're really tall.
Like,
or
Mark,
when we were practicing, you know.
Right. Or when somebody dunks on you.
Yeah.
But like Mark Eaton is still the one that in the Jazz's locker room that
still kind of gets
consistently surprises me in how tall he is. Like 7 feet isn't tall anymore. 7'5" is still really, really tall.
Yeah, no, that's true. I used to work at a restaurant. I remember when F. Fleming's and he came in and I was like, oh man, he's really tall. And they all come in. And even when I went to go work, you know, down in the tunnels underground, every time I see him, same thing. I'm like, man, that old guy, he's tall.
Yeah, it's crazy. So but just recap, we're here with Nicole Hernandez from Jazz 1600 AM. By the way, Nicole, how did you get started in doing Spanish broadcasting? How did this all come about?
So this is going to be my fourth season with the Jazz. My first one was an intern as a games op intern. So we would find, you know, halftime contestants, timeout contestants, pregame stuff, postgame stuff. And,
you picked me for the free throw contest once. Probably not you directly.
Probably not me.
No.
It was one of us.
But yeah.
Wait, I didn't know that you've done this before.
That's a total fib. It was way long, way before 4 years ago. It was a long time
ago. But you've done it.
I have.
I want to hear this story at some point.
It wasn't successful.
No?
Yeah, we didn't
win. What happened to, you know, your, what percentage kind of free throw shooter?
No, but I was 9. That it.
Oh, okay. It doesn't matter.
Or
no.
10 or something. So it was a total fib. It was not when you were around. But this was, it was my dad and my brother and I. We all did it. It was like us three on one side shooting free throws, and then there were a group of three on the other side shooting free throws.
Okay.
And they made more than us.
So, well, that personally reflects on you and your character. That's on your CV from here on out. Yeah. Is missed free throws at the Jazz game. For so anyway, sorry, continue the story, Nicole.
Oh, no. So that was just my internship, and, you know, that was my first time ever kind of working with that restaurant that I mentioned, is because all the players came in there and we knew who, you know, they would come and get their meals from us, any of their pregame meals. And so I started doing that internship, and I wasn't anywhere as near as good as the other interns, you know, so it was just kind of something that they kind of gave because we knew.
How are game day interns better than other game day interns? Like, what do the good ones do that the bad ones don't?
They just kind of, I mean, one of them had done, like, and she had done the same thing with Rao with the Blaze.
Just like background and
yeah,
stuff.
Just like
okay,
she,
okay,
know,
okay.
And like it didn't, it, but it just she knew like she could focus on getting to know people. Whereas, you know, I was like, I get to watch games courtside when we're not finding contestants. So I'm going to watch games courtside. Yeah. That's exactly what I did. And I was so bummed because, you know, they didn't reach out to me again for another season, which I didn't expect because it's not a position, that, it's not an internship that leads to a position. It's more one of those just to put on your resume. And I was bored. I was at the U in my last, one of my, last few semesters, and I was like, well, I'm just gonna see at the U website what like a job or something like that. And I saw the Spanish radio one, and I was like, well, I speak Spanish, they're not gonna really make me talk on the radio, and I know about basketball, so you know, I want to keep my foot in the door. So I went, I applied, and Dan Clayton, I remember my interview was with him at Starbucks, and he didn't make it seem like I was gonna be talking at all. And then my first day they went and they showed me, you know, okay, we'll have you watch the game, this is what you're gonna be doing. So I thought, oh, I gotta do stats, I'm gonna, they need coffee, I go get coffee, just something simple like that. The next time they're like, okay, let's go down and let's go do an interview with a player. And I said, what? I didn't think I was going to be talking at all. Like, it was just something that, I don't know, just good, really good timing. And I never had any experience with radio before, which is another reason why, again, I didn't think I'd be talking. And it was something that I loved so much, I just kind of fell into it.
Oh, so, Dan.
I know.
Good Dan. Love that man.
Yeah, Dan's awesome. So, I mean, I feel like Dan taught me that I feel confident bringing the Spanish radio people on to Salt City Hoops just because Dan does great work and then you do great work too.
Thank you.
Like I feel like this is an under-recognized segment of the Jazz media.
Well, it's one that's growing, and we really do hope for it. Like I was talking to one of Billy, I don't know how to say it. Is it Leia, Leah?
Bill
Lay.
Who knows?
It's a three-letter last name, but it's pretty difficult for me. But I was talking to him about getting probably, you know, like even something as simple as like an Instagram account for an official like Spanish one for the Jazz, just something like that, because we definitely are growing. This is gonna be our fifth season. It's my third one with them, but you know, yeah. I'm excited. It's something, you know, we're getting there. We're getting there. The numbers are still pretty small, but
yeah, no, but I think there you have something to offer value to like the English fans as well. You know, you guys are putting a lot of effort into covering the games, and it's just something that I guess a lot of people aren't paying attention to right now, and I hope that changes, as you know, hopefully we're giving like airtime to Dan and you and that sort of thing, because you guys do awesome work.
Well, thank you, we really appreciate that. You should go learn, you know, pick up a Spanish dictionary and just come listen to us. Just come on our show.
I know a little bit of Spanish, like not as much as you guys had Tony Parks on one. Was it Tony or was it Spencer?
We had Tony. We've had Spencer. We had, oh my gosh, I cannot believe I'm blanking out on his name. I'm completely
Regardless, you've had
Randy Rigby. That's
oh,
what it was.
Randy Rigby was on.
Yeah, he was on our show.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah, we had him. I mean, I would speak to them in English and then Nelson would translate what they said in Spanish, or Tony just decided to say adios pelota for every answer. If he didn't know, he just would say that.
That means goodbye ball, right?
Yeah.
It does. He uses it for baseball.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. That makes
sense.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So we might have you on one time.
Okay. Well,
you and I will be talking and then we'll just translate.
Yeah, I'll have to practice my Spanish. I took Spanish in high school and college. Like, I should be better at it than I am, but
I think, yeah, the same here. I would embarrass myself if I ever did that.
And that's okay. So anyway, going back to this media training camp. No, I wanted to ask just so like people knew who you were, and had your point of view. So the next thing was the scrimmage time, so we did these what's called 5-on-5-on-5, which means basically you've got two teams playing 5-on-5 half court and one team on the other end waiting for the outcome of that little 5-on-5 possession. To the winner of that possession comes back the other way.
Oh, okay.
It's basically just 5-on-5, and
so
just
offense scores a basket, they turn around and go down to the other side.
Yeah,
or if
yeah.
the defense stops them, then they just take the ball down too.
Right.
So, okay.
Yep. And so I think this was the most interesting part of the scrimmage, just because of the media fights, and not fights so much as like media versus media. You know, there's David Locke out there guarding whoever,
going
know,
for it, man.
Going for
going
it,
going 100%.
Was he?
Yeah,
nice. Yeah. I tried to block his shot once. That was great. So there were some great moments. The first one was the Jody Genesee shot we talked about earlier, and that celebration. You know,
The celebration was awesome
for making an 18-footer. That guy knows how to celebrate.
I totally expected the opposite. As soon as I saw him hit it, I expected him to just kind of like jog back, no expression on his face, like just do the playing it cool. Like this happens every day. Like that's what I expected. But then I was pleasantly surprised because I was expecting he was just going to play it off.
We were very happy for our fellow teammate, for our fellow Red.
So there was a Britton Johnson. Johnson alley-oop, which, you know, was marginally impressive, but you've played basketball before. Like, I don't know. That was him just showing us up. But I think the best shot of the day was the Patrick Kinahan 20-foot hook shot as time expired. Did you see that one, or were you looking the other way?
No, I didn't see that one. The one that I remember the most was Billy's. That was that shot, like, right before the...
That's right. He had a buzzer-beater, too. Yeah. That was nice. Yeah, PK had this, like, ridiculous, like... time running out, dribbling, he's stuck in the corner and just threw it over his head, and of course it went in, and then he jogged off the floor. Like,
did he play it off? He did the play it off thing.
He did eventually return, but I mean, I'm sure that we will be hearing about that moment for years to come on sports radio, so I don't want to talk about it too much, but because it's PK, but it was kind of cool.
Did they? Were there any times where they where somebody screwed up one of the drills and they made you just separately run ladders individually?
Like, no,
did they single people out? Like
no,
that?
We all screwed up drills. Yeah, we would have been running ladders for days.
Right.
Okay. So, yeah. See, I come from hockey when I like that's what I played when I was younger, and that's pretty much the standard there. Like,
if we were NBA players, I think they
probably
may have.
Yeah.
And from my understanding, and I was talking to Dan about this after the training camp happened, you know, we went to dinner for Salt City Hoops. It sounded like when Ty Corbin did this event 4 years ago during the lockout, I guess that was 3 years ago, but regardless, Ty made them run a lot more. And it almost seemed like a competitive thing, like, well, you know, you guys don't know how to play basketball, so we're going to make you run a lot and basically embarrass you so that way, you know, you ask us easier questions, I guess. I don't know what the... it's still a fun event, and it was cool of Ty to put it on, but it almost had this confrontational feeling is what Dan was saying.
Okay.
This one, I feel like, was way more educational and way more, supportive and... supportive isn't the right word. It was more fun because, you know, the Jazz were trying to teach us things that we would see out on the floor next year. It wasn't so confrontational.
Yeah, I think it was just a great way to just establish a really great rapport with everyone and with the coaching staff. It was really good team building. Very supportive.
That was kind of something I was going to ask. Was it sort of transferring it over, not even just into the media practice and not just comparing it to Ty Corbin's media practice from a few years ago, but just in general, and with this as one of the few times that you've sort of been able to interact with Quinn, and were there any other staff members there besides Quinn?
Yeah, the entire staff.
Okay, yeah. So the whole staff was there. I mean, this is, you guys have been, they've talked on the record and things like that, but this is one of the first times you've kind of been able to loosen things up with them and whatnot. Is there maybe a little bit of a different feel with this staff than there was with Corbin's? Just in general, from what you've seen so far, this being one of the first times that you've had a chance to sort of see all of them, talk to all of them?
Yeah, to me, I mean, so I had a chance to attend a Jazz practice last year with, you know, real players. And that was, I feel like it was a different feeling. And maybe, again, it's just because a practice with real NBA players is going to be more serious than media mess around time, right? But in terms of at least from my perspective, it's a lot more open, a lot more communicative, a lot more teaching than I feel like Ty Corbin's staff and practices were. And again, this may just be that we're basketball noobs, but it just seemed like there was more, this is about you guys improving, this is about you guys learning what we're doing here, and less about you got to work hard to get better.
Okay.
Yeah, I felt like it was really good. Like, I felt like it was something that I felt like going, I mean, but I had never done a practice like this before, but I definitely feel like I'm excited for the season. I feel like it's going to be a lot more open, and I feel like this was a really great way to get to know everyone so that coming into the season, we know that we kind of have that open communication.
Okay.
And I feel like they kind of established a trust with us, and not a sense of, I guess they understand that, you know, our roles are very important because we are the one who provide these stories to their fans, but kind of a very appreciative act on their part.
You like to see that kind of thing.
Yeah,
you
know, felt really good.
I like seeing that sort of stuff. It's just a recognition that this group of people is important in their own way. Like, the media is important. The media plays a role in things, mm-hmm. and that's, you know, that they're going to include people, and that they're, yeah, the openness, I think, is kind of the best way of putting it. And I think that's good. It's a good way of starting things, essentially. It's not that this is the very first Jazz thing that's happened, but it's a, you know, new staff coming in. You want to make the right kind of impressions. I think this is the sort of thing that gets you right down those lines.
One thing I'm curious about, Nicole, it's, I think you were the only female reporter there. Is that right?
Yeah.
Was that weird at all? Were you treated any differently? Like,
I got to get my water first.
Okay.
I mean, that didn't happen, but, I mean, I'm in a sense, I'm kind of used to it. I mean, there's always, you know, women, I'm not going to say there aren't any women in my field, but there are. But I'm kind of used to not being around them, you know. And I remember when Derek called, he's one of the PR guys. I said, "Is there going to be another woman there? Like, am I going to have to play basketball against these guys? Really, is this what we're going to have to do?" Because I didn't want to be the one who, okay, this isn't just taken seriously because a woman's there. And I mean, when I played a game of basketball the day before, which wasn't that great of an idea because I was really tired from it. It was against guys, but. I mean, you kind of just get used to it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Every once in a while you run into a woman and that's really nice and that's really fun. But I mean, you don't see it that way anymore. I mean, I remember the first time that I walked into the locker room and that was the worst moment of my, that was such a shock for me. Hmm. And then just from there, I don't think it's ever been as big of a shock.
No, I'm just curious because it just, you were the only one there, and there's, you know, there's the, K-Jazz producer, or I guess Root Sports producer, whose name I forget, who's always in the locker room too. But it's an underrepresented field, and I was curious about how that changed, I guess, your perception of the event, or how it changed what happened on the floor for you.
Well, I mean, it was nice though to be taken serious. Like if I was messing up a play, because you know I do like to watch. It is kind of fun to watch, like, when I go do something versus, like, when I go see a man do it. It's something that I look at all the time because I'm constantly faced by that, during, right. You know, throughout the season. And it was nice that I didn't feel like if I messed up, they're like, okay, yeah, go ahead and go on. Like, they'd be like, no, go over here. Like, what are you doing? Go back over there. Yeah. And that happened a lot. Trust me. They were like, no, that's not where you're supposed to stand. Nope, don't come off the screen like that. You know, come around. And it was fun. And it feels, you know, it's always kind of feels good to be taken seriously, especially as a woman. So it was something that felt kind of good. It was really nice to finally work. Do something like this alongside all of you with the English radio, because it's only three of us for the Spanish radio, and that's it.
Right.
So it's pretty cool.
So I think getting back to being accosted by the coaching staff, because I think that's fun. Like, I think maybe my favorite moment was there's on that, I believe it was the Channel 2 play. I stepped out of bounds. They had us flash out to the wing for a corner three, and I stepped out of bounds.
Ugh.
And then Dennis Lindsay is over here on the sideline, probably 10 feet away. Then, you know, Larson, that's bad footwork. You got to work. I really expected more from you, being such a proponent of the corner three, to be able to not step out of bounds while taking one.
It's not very much room there. The NBA three is long. There's not a whole lot of room to stand in between there.
And I also think it's great that, like, the whole Jazz organization is behind this event. So, you know, having the GM, Dennis Lindsay, be there just to hobnob with the media and to kind of, you know, obviously laugh at us a little bit. Justin Zanuck, assistant GM, was there as well. You know, it's cool to have, like, the whole organization to come and show that they're here to support Quinn and support this new offense, support the new direction the Jazz are going in.
I would have gotten myself a tryout. Totally.
There is one roster spot left. I hear they're in negotiations with Jody, I'm sure, after making that shot. I guess, are there any last impressions for you? I'm trying to think of any great stories that I haven't covered yet.
I was going to ask who's the best non-Thurl, non-Britain player?
Ooh.
Like actual media, like just media, somebody who'd never played the game for a living before.
Bill Lee was pretty good.
Yeah, he was really good.
Tony Parks was pretty good.
His shot, like, that was it. Like, he saved us. He saved us from a run. Again, I got to mention that. Thank you, Tony. But his shot was really on it. But I would have to say, for me, it would have been Billy. Because I remember when I would be on defense, like, I could kind of keep up in them with him. I was like, oh, man, I really got to step this up. And he can keep up with them.
He's one of those guys who does, like, those crazy bike races, like, Logan to whatever.
So he's,
like,
just in freaky shape.
Yeah, so he's in incredible shape. And, like, it comes from a family of, you know, marathon runners and triathletes and whatever else. So, like, yeah, I was not surprised to see him just kill it out there. I follow him on Instagram and I see what he's up to on the weekends. I'm like, yeah, okay, he's gonna be okay. And Adam Mikulich from KUTV is kind of the same way. He does, like, the Ragnar and you know, the 150 mile one, whatever that one's called. But he was also in shape and also put some of us to shame in terms of just how he looked decent out there, I thought.
Did anyone cross Thurl?
I don't think so.
I would have
tried.
I would have definitely tried.
I told him I would break his ankles, but that didn't happen at all. I just passed him.
Talking earlier, I think the person who was the most feisty was Tim Montemayor of 1320, who demanded the ball on every possession. and he took a ridiculous three at one point that it was not open whatsoever, but, you know, that's okay. You only have one chance at these training mini camps. I can't even begrudge the guy for being a ball hog. Like, he was taking advantage.
Absolutely. If you have a chance to shoot a no-dribble pull-up three with a hand in your face, and there's even the slightest chance it might go in and make you look awesome, then I think you have to do it.
I completely agree. And so, I guess Rod Zundel got on him at one point for not passing the ball. And this all happened on my team, and I guess I should be more than peripherally aware of what was happening. But I was just focused on defense, baby.
That's the way to go. Yeah, that's what I try and do when I play basketball, is because I don't have the actual skill set offensively, but I know the game, so I can play defense. Like, I played hockey, so I'm willing to get physical. People can run into me. That's cool, man.
You're going to foul people.
My brother's I told this story at the Salt City Hoops dinner the other night. My brother's the only person I've ever known to foul out of a junior jazz game.
I fouled out of a church ball game once.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah, that was good.
I fouled out a lot when I played in basketball in high school, so.
Okay. The fifth for my brother in that game was literally just like shoving a kid who came to set a pick because my brother didn't understand what a pick was and why they got to stand in front of him. There's a shout out, Dan. What's up?
That's funny. I think that was great. The other thing I thought was cool is just like how patient the Jazz were with us through messing up,
everything
from the sets to the plays to even things like the bulk shooting we were messing up at a time.
Yeah.
Just like they were consistently just patient with us, having us, they really did want to show us the fundamentals of the offense. I also think it was interesting that they wanted to keep the defense secret. Like, did you notice that at the very beginning where they said, basically, we'll show you the offense because we don't necessarily want the
defense,
getting out there until the scrimmage or the first preseason game. So I have really no idea what to expect if the Jazz are going to play like a Chicago Bulls overloading style type of defense, or if they're going, they could be going crazy zone.
I think they're
going
to play a hybrid. I think we're going to see all sorts of different looks from them. I think we're going to see a lot of Thibsian style stuff, like you're saying, a lot of strong side. But I definitely think that the main thing is pick and rolls. I think the bigs are almost exclusively going to be hanging back. I don't think they're going to do a whole lot more. I think we've realized that. I think the NBA in general has realized that unless you have a pretty specific skill set for your bigs that the Jazz kind of don't have at the moment, except for maybe Favors, you shouldn't play it that way. You're just, it's too exploitable. There's too many ways to exploit it.
Though I should point out, so the Jazz kind of switched to that style of defense probably a third of the way through the year last year, and then, we're the worst team in the league defensively. So.
Yeah, well, and then they switched back. They came back to sort of starting to play, especially with Cantor. He started hanging back more frequently.
Okay. So, I'm curious just to see how that turns out. And to me, that's kind of the biggest thing I'll be watching for in the first Jazz game and the open scrimmage. I believe that's scheduled for the day before the first Jazz home game. I was hearing rumors. I'm not sure if that's true. But so that would be October 6th is the tentative date for that scrimmage, let's say.
Yeah, I think I saw that.
Any other last impressions before we go on to the crazy trade idea of the week?
Well, I wasn't there, so.
No, it was just really fun. It was something that I really enjoyed doing. Even Big Buddha, that was fun to play with him, too. It was a really great team-building experience on their behalf.
Yeah, so, it wasn't just sports media, by the way. So, like, Big Buddha was there. Let's see. Who am I? Ron Bird, who's not sports, but he just is the primary host for KUTV. He was there. So it went beyond just the general sports media that's always there. We also got some other personalities in the mix, which was fun. So, the other thing I just want to mention was, I'm sure everyone's seen this already, but Aaron Falk, they gave the number 12 and they gave Jody the 32 on red team. So they had Stockton to Malone recreated via Salt Lake Tribune to Deseret News.
Does Jody have the pick and roll footwork to make that happen?
No. Okay. I don't believe he does. But to be fair, I'm not sure Aaron has the passing game or really the game to set it. He's more of a soccer guy anyway. He's a soccer guy that was pushed into basketball, and he's a great writer, don't get me wrong, but it's clear that Aaron has not played a lot of basketball.
Hey, well, I bet you he's not alone in that room.
Yeah, to be fair, most of us probably don't have those abilities.
Yeah, Aaron did not look out of place, so don't get me wrong. He was just fine. Stockton to Malone, it was not in terms of basketball quality. Let's put it that way.
The heart was there. That was what was important.
That's what's important.
Yes. Okay, so crazy trade idea of the week time. So, Nicole, just every week we do with some kind of crazy trade idea so that we have I don't know. Crazy trades are fun, right? Like,
they're fun to talk
trade
about.
Ideas are just fun to imagine, to think about, to discuss.
It's just fun to imagine different player scenarios with the Jazz. Especially ones that we know will never happen, because it's just fun to think about what it would be like.
And so in, like, at least half of the trades so far, we've traded Enes Kanter, which I feel bad about, because I just feel like he's the asset right now that people are looking at the Jazz maybe giving up something for.
Yeah.
And honestly, most of these trades we don't come up with ourselves. We're getting from various sources. Today's comes from Biz Gil Walker from Real GM. So again, another message board trade. You know it's real. Real GM, hashtag GM, whatever. the trade today is Enes Kanter and the Golden State 2017 first that we received in the Richard Jefferson, Andres Biedrinch, and Brandon Rush trade. And of course, Kevin Murphy. For Julius Randle from the Los Angeles Lakers. And I think that's an interesting one. So first of all, it does match up salary-wise. The Lakers get a little bit of compensation in that 2017 first in order to kind of give up their recently traded big. Enes Kanter was drafted number 3. Julius Randle was drafted number 7. So you know, there is some value difference there, but you also have to consider that Enes Kanter's contract is starting. His second contract starts next year, whereas Julius Randle, you've got 3 years of cheap rookie salary contract. What are your thoughts, Ben?
I think if the timeline was just slightly different, you could see it being something that the Lakers would consider in real life. I think the fact that, like you're saying, Kanter's contract does start next year and not the year after. Like, if there was a chance that Kanter didn't have to get paid until the year after, especially with the fact that that gives them another year to see how good he is and to see how much they would have to pay him, because that's when Kobe is likely going to be retired, based on what he said and where his massive, ridiculous salary is no longer on the books. For right now, I don't think that, based on their team-building strategy, that the Lakers are really trying to take on that kind of money before Kobe's gone, because I think almost at this point they've kind of realized in their heads, like, okay, we're probably not. I don't think they think they're going to win anything. I think they realize that they're going to have to rebuild it for after that. And
yeah, I think everybody but Kobe Bryant understands
exactly
that in that organization.
Exactly. So
Kobe,
I think it's kind
still,
of just a bide your
we're going to surprise everybody. We got this.
Yeah, and you know, and with that in mind, you know, they get a couple years of Randle on the cheap. They get to develop him, and then by the time he's in his third year, that's when Kobe's gone, and he can be expected to kind of step into a larger role there. And but for that reason, in the real world, I don't know that they consider it, but that's why we call it the crazy trade. And I think it's interesting. I think it's a fun thing. Randle has some of the same skills as Kanter, or at least projects to. Certain areas he definitely projects to be better. And yeah, I think it'd be interesting to see how he'd pair with Favors as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think Kanter fits a little bit better with their current roster than Julius Randle does, just because they have 8 power forwards. And I think you can play Enes Kanter at center more reliably than I think you can Julius Randle, who's six seven, six eight, right?
He's kind of undersized. The slightest bit undersized, doesn't have the massive wingspan.
And so I think you could, you know, more cohesively put together like a Carlos Boozer and Julius Randle lineup, or a Julius Randle Ed Davis kind of lineup for the Lakers, which, you know, if they really do want to go the Kobe Bryant path and try to compete this year, then
they're gonna try. I mean, it's not gonna work,
Effort's
but they're gonna try. Like,
yeah, then I think it is a better fit. I agree. They can try, but they will probably fail, which, again, as a Jazz fan, just makes me so happy.
Linsanity.
Oh, yeah, they have Jeremy Lin, too. It's all going down in Lakerville. I mean, I like Jeremy Lin, but he's not that good.
It's going to be an interesting year for them.
Yeah. And for the Jazz, I think it's interesting. Julius Randle, I think, again, we've talked about this a lot on the podcast, gives you more variability in terms of outcomes than someone like Enes Kanter, who you've got 3 years under the belt. And sure, you haven't seen Enes Kanter play 30 minutes a night yet, but you kind of have an idea of where Enes Kanter is going to be. Just because Julius Randle's a rookie, I think there's a wider possibility of where he could be. I think he could end up as a, you know, like a almost a Big Baby Davis kind of output type.
He's stronger and closer to the hoop. Like, he's yeah. a He really, you know, I hate the player-to-player comparisons, but he is going to have some Zach Randolph in him in terms of just, like, he's going to hurt some people down low. Guys are going to really kind of not want to bang elbows with him all the time down low. And he's even the fact that he's a little bit smaller size, I don't know that that's going to hurt him. It's going to hurt him from the standpoint of not having the length to get over certain guys, but... and you never know. He's got the shooting stroke at the moment that you could see him developing that shot pretty far out. And if that were to happen, he could be pretty valuable.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, you know, that's his best case as you look at someone like Zach Randolph, but plus some, I think, in terms of Zach Randolph is actually a pretty good athlete, but I think plus some in terms of shooting and maybe even defense. You know, it's a question mark to be sure, but I think there's... I think Julius Randle, you could say, could possibly be a better player than Enes Kanter, just because you don't know where he's going to be.
Oh, I think his ceiling is definitely significantly higher than Kanter's, I would say.
So I think it's something that the Jazz consider and ultimately do. I agree with you that I think the value is kind of low for the Lakers, but that's why it's the crazy trade idea of the week, right. So we can talk about it. Well, cool. Thanks, Nicole, for joining us again. It was so awesome to have you on the show. And thanks for playing in the media training day.
Attempting to play.
Did you... I want to ask, my final stat line was 2.0 assists, 0 rebounds. Did you have any, up scoring in the scrimmaging?
Almost made one. Almost. That was like my almost like best moment of my life because okay. I got a pass from Thurl Bailey. So nice. 0 for 1
oh, for
in the
one.
Field, but oh well.
Yeah,
and I made
okay.
a few shots during the drills. I made like 2 or 3 free throw shots.
I didn't make that, so I was going underhand with the free throws as is my wont.
Did you?
Yeah, well, I feel like it's unfair. I mean, this is, again, completely random, but I feel like it's unfair that Rick Barry did the underhand free throws and then did not teach his kids, Jen and Brent, to do underhand free throws. And, like, someone has to live on that tradition, and I will be that
you
person.
You carried it on.
Underhand free throws, more people should try it. Shaq should have tried it. I
think we've come
Andre
to the
Drummond should try it.
That they're not as effective. That's why they don't.
No, like, who else?
You don't think it'll be an up-and-coming trend?
And failed?
Well, pretty much not nobody anymore because it's just not. I don't know. I don't know if it's maybe, you know what? Maybe there's somebody that it could work better for. And maybe there's a small bit of like, guys want to look macho. They don't want to look weird. Like, I don't know.
This is my cause. This is going to be like what's on my tombstone is like reintroduced the underhand free throw.
Macho-ized it.
If yeah. I ever see someone do it in an NBA game, I'll be sure to tweet you really quick.
I'm not capable of macho-izing anything, but I just want to have it return somehow, make it acceptable again. So anyway, thanks again for joining us to Nicole on the Salt City Hoop Show. Hope to have you on the show again soon, and we'll have the radio show and podcast too, so there will be a lot of opportunities. You were great. Ben, thanks again for joining us. Thanks again to our audience for listening to another Salt City Hoops podcast.